Welcome to this edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaverde. Before we begin, remember, discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. And indices that I mentioned today are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk, and investors should be prepared to bear loss, including, but hopefully not, total loss of principal. Investing involves risk, and you can lose money, of course. Consult a qualified investment professional before making any decisions, investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. And remember, the views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. And Money Matters is about money. As money has mattered, matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another. Controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about your lives and livelihood. It's about my lives and livelihood. In short, it is about you. Today's show, 343, entitled New Year Correction Portfolio Tracking. And, well, they say, as goes January, so goes the rest of the year. And so, may not be a good thing. NASDAQ off 10% from its high. Not necessarily all in January. It started about, I think the high was like third week of November, somewhere in there. 2020 was the year of a 38% correction in the Dow in 15 trading days or so, followed by a blistering upward rally. 2021 was characterized, at least in my opinion, by violent swings up and down. And every time some investors said they had vaccines and the world reopened, then it shut down, another variant came out. So there was just up and down and jerked all around. And so 2021 was kind of bipolar in the way I kind of deemed it. Many investors that I talk to, they wonder why their portfolios don't keep up with the major indexes they see on the evening news. And indeed, my portfolios never track the major indexes. Specifically, when I refer to an index as the Dow 30, NASDAQ, S&P 500, the Russell, and there's a whole lot of other indexes that you may not know about or may know about that track different areas of the world and different types of stocks, et cetera, et cetera. Indexes do just that. They measure a basket of stocks that are in that particular index. In other words, when you can't buy an index because the index is just like the ruler, right? You can measure your foot, but your foot is not the measurement. So indexes just track stocks. You can't actually buy that index. You can buy what stocks are in the index, but because the indexes are altered all the time, that they add stocks and they add them and they take them away and they add more concentration, less concentrations, it's hard to track that. But you can buy an ETF that tracks the index, or they attempt to track the index. They'll never track it one-to-one, but they'll attempt to do so. For example, the Dow 30 encompasses, surprise, 30 stocks that are thought to represent a broad base of industries in the United States. You can't invest in the index per se, as it only has a measuring stick for the stocks in it. And the stocks in it are not proportionally allocated. In other words, you don't have a lot of the same, you don't have the exact same amount in the Dow 30. All 30 stocks don't have equal weightings. They have it geometrically weighted. Like many other indexes, the makeup of an index is adjusted according to what metric the measuring method stipulates. In other words, you can buy stocks measured by the index, but again, adjustments are made to the index from people that actually set those measurements, so it would be difficult to measure the index exactly. There are funds that attempt to replicate the measuring metrics of the underlying index, ETFs and some mutual funds, but the key word is here is they attempt. Like I say, most of these funds, however, they do a pretty good job at least coming very close to replicating the movements in the index that it is targeted. But because these funds do mirror the subject index, proxy type funds, or if an investor holds one of these proxy type funds, your portfolio will more or less follow the performance of the index. Now, to the question at hand, people ask me, well, why didn't my portfolio move up or down with the indexes? They usually don't ask why it didn't move down with the indexes, because if it didn't move down, they're probably happy. But they will ask why it didn't move up. In other words, if I see the Dow moved up for 12% a year, why did the portfolio only move up 4, or 3, or 2, or 5, or even maybe fall in value? The question is a good one. Understanding the answer will also give the investor, you, a better understanding of how your portfolio is constructed. In other words, you will better understand what you hold and why you hold it. It is common for investors and advisors to adhere to something that we call MPT, standing for Modern Portfolio Theory. Okay? It's a suggestion, a kind of a rule, not really a rule, but it's sort of a, you know, a suggestion on what to hold in a portfolio and what percentages might be considered for the modern advisor or investor. Now, not everyone might agree with MPT, and their allocation percentages might differ, but modern portfolio theory basically uses good common sense in its makeup of recommendations. Quite simply, modern portfolio theory, or MPT, recommends holding a basket of different stocks and in different industries. We know that as diversification, and adding to that a percentage of fixed income securities. Well, what's fixed income? Fixed income are securities that, instead of you relying solely on the appreciation up or down of the price of the stock, fixed income securities usually offer a rate of return. Like it might say 3% or 4%. We will pay you this amount. That might be a bond, a note. You could think of your mortgage as a fixed index, fixed income for sure. Anything that has an interest rate that's on there, hence the name fixed, because it prints the interest rate doesn't print it on there, but it's on there. It says you buy a bond from California, is paying 3.5%, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you buy the fixed income instrument with a fixed rate of return on it in lieu of price movement, which we call growth, okay? So price movement is called growth. You're owning a lot of different things. It's called diversification. Fixed income is usually debt instruments, usually, but not always. They're bonds, notes, or other types of debt, might be treasuries, which is U.S. debt, but also would include preferred stocks and certain funds and baskets that encompass and maybe combine similar types of securities, fixed income. Fixed income, although has the word fixed in it, does not mean the price cannot move, and therefore it does not mean it cannot go down. Fixed income holdings can, depending on what they are, move up and down. It is thought, and historically so, it does happen, that more often than not, fixed income is more stable than traditional stocks. So a real conservative investor just might buy bonds his whole life. Not according to modern portfolio theory would you do that, because modern portfolio theory wants you to buy bonds and stocks. Fixed income also has a tendency to move in opposite direction of stocks. In other words, bonds can move opposite direction. And the reason it does that is investors gravitate from taking more risk, okay? So let's say they think the market's going to go up. So they gravitate towards taking more risk in an up market. And they're selling off fixed income because they get greedy. Well, the fixed income is only going to pay me 3%. And that's fixed for the most part. So I want to buy stocks because I want to go for higher returns. When investors are nervous, however, investors may sell stocks and buy more fixed income for the perceived safety holding that fixed income historically has demonstrated, hence their inverse relationships. When I'm paranoid, I'm scared of the market, I may own a lot of fixed income. When I'm really, you know, hot on the market, hot to trot on the market, then I might own more stocks. And so that balance may move back and forth. Because of the opposite movements of fixed income and traditional stocks, they have a tendency to move opposite. They can move together, and they have moved together in certain times. But because they move opposite of each other, and you don't own all stocks, if the stock market runs, fixed income may drift downward. So that'll pull the gains from the stocks down. So they basically handcuff the portfolio's return when compared to the index's general, and designed to do so, so you're not all in one direction. As a result, portfolio performance often lags the gains or losses of the major indexes. So if you hold modern portfolio theory holdings with fixed income and stocks, then the portfolio can lag the major index because as the stock in the portfolio goes up with the stock market, the fixed income may drop, offsetting that. And that's why people hold fixed income, is because it'll offset a stock drop or can offset a stock drop. Nothing is for sure in the market, including the way these markets move. Usually what happens is when stocks sell off, fixed income goes up, unless stocks continue to sell off, and then fixed income catches a cold, catches contagion, and it may start to drop along with securities, and then you've got an all-out route. And that happened during March of 2020. We saw fixed income sell off after stocks had sold off for a long time. We saw it in 08 and 09. That was a real bad one. And we didn't see it so much in the dot-com crash, but fixed income does offer some protection, but not exclusively. Fixed income can lose money and may at times move with stocks, so they don't guarantee against losses. The returns on fixed income are never guaranteed, and modern portfolio theory does not guarantee performance nor prevent losses. And of course, past performance does not guarantee future results, and investing involves risk, as you know. Okay, so not a recommendation to buy or sell any securities or make up your portfolio. Consult a qualified financial advisor or professional, or just do your own research before investing. Okay, you're listening to Money Matters, and I believe we're on show, what, 343, entitled New Year Correction, Portfolio Tracking. We'll be right back with the rest of the show.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. Old man depression, you are through, you've done us wrong. We never see a headline, but a red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can look that guy right in the eye. We're in the money. Come on, my honey. Let's spend it, spend it, spend it right on ball.
Welcome back to Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. You're listening to show 343, entitled New Year Correction, Tracking the Indexes. So, yeah, we've come into January, and they say as so goes January, so goes the market for the rest of the year. Hope not. Right now, January, we're into the 19th, at least when I'm putting some of this information on track. has not been a good January. That doesn't mean the rest of the year will be horrendous, but they do say, as go January, so goes the rest of the year. So now that some investors' portfolios may have been cut to ribbons, when that happens, I'm not necessarily saying now, when portfolios do get cut up a little bit from a fall, my phones usually start ringing. And they usually ask three questions. Should I buy stocks now? Should I get out altogether, or should I continue to hold? Which question they ask depends on if they practice prudent principal protection and have protective stops in place, which are sell points, and sold positions as the market fell, or whether they followed the buy and hold for the long-term crowd down the rat hole of devastating losses. I'm of the opinion that much like the money management people might practice when playing a slot machine, whereas at a certain point you pick up your chips and walk away, investors should practice the same action with their investments. After all, your lifetime savings are much more important than a few hundred you might forfeit at a one-armed bandit. In my opinion, you have to use portfolio protection. And, you know, I'll tell you, portfolio protection when you sell, if things start to fall, that's another reason your portfolio won't track the index. When you sell, you're out. So if the market turns back up again, you're out and you're not going to make anything. So it is the downside of trying to protect yourself. As I said before, a long time ago, 1987, I lost about almost half of what I had, which was a lot, in about 3 days. And the pain of that was so bad, I promised I would never do it again. I've lost money since then. But now, when my portfolio starts to drop, I just get out. I said, okay, that's it, I'm out. That being said, I'm always surprised to find that a number of advisors and investors alike don't practice or even consider stop-loss strategy or predetermined sell points to protect retirement's money. Now, I will tell you, like I keep saying, Warren Buffett has two rules. The famous investor Warren Buffett, which is rule one, don't lose money. Rule two, don't forget rule one. And don't lose money means if you have gains, don't give them back, in my opinion. Many stick to the adage, hold for the long term. And they just ride the market down to wherever it might end up, and where it ends up might not be a very nice and warm and fuzzy place. Now, if you look at professional traders and option traders, and even professional traders that trade their own accounts, they all have stop-loss protection. They all basically say, if I lose this much, I'm out. If I lose 20% in an option or 50% in an option, I'm out. And if I double my money in an option, I'll take half. When you lose a lot of money in the market, I'm sure if you've been in the market for a long time, you didn't sell, you know what it's like, but you forget, okay? When you lose money, you lose sleep, and you could lose a good portion of your life savings. I hear the ring of the markets always come back from the peanut gallery right about now when the markets drop, and I doubt that this time around or when crashes happen that those words are providing much comfort to those that lost a good portion of their retirement accounts in a sell-off. It seems like buying a bunch of stocks and blindly riding the market, whichever it goes, wherever it goes, is not much of a strategy and certainly not worth a paycheck. My opinion, of course, if you want to just buy indexes and hold for the long term, you don't need an advisor because they're just going to do the same thing. Just buy the indexes, the ETFs that represent the index. You can't actually buy an index, but you can buy the stocks in it. If buying and holding is your desire, why not consider sitting on the myriad of index funds that track the indexes that are available in the public market and don't pay the advisor? Not that I recommend that, but some people say, I don't want to ever sell. Then just buy a bunch of ETFs, you know, do some investigation on what ETFs to buy. You can't just buy anything, but if you know what you're doing and you want to buy the indexes, you could buy a Dow Jones ETF if you want. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell anything here. I'm just saying, when you go to the store, you can buy some fruit. Okay, that's not a recommendation to buy fruit. It's just a statement you can buy fruit. Okay, so in any case, if you want to buy index funds, you can buy an index fund that represents it. True, the strategy works well in up markets and may even work over longer periods. But as a rare investor that can sleep soundly seeing the recent nuclear damages that have occurred in 08 and 09 and maybe during March of 2020, possibly wiping away years of hard-earned wages, not a pleasant thought to be sure. If you've ever gone through a massive crash, it is not fun. In 87, I didn't forget it. I did not forget it. And I didn't want to go through that again. It was just too painful. So back to the two type. You know, I know a guy that, not personally, but I read about him. He just holds Apple in all his retirement accounts. That's all he owns, 100% Apple. Not a recommendation to do this. That is not according to modern portfolio theory. Apparently, the guy's made, you know, lots of money doing that. Just held it, never sold it, and doesn't own anything else. I myself wouldn't do it. The first calls that I get, there's usually back to two or three phone calls that I get. The first call is from the savvy investor who got a feeling or whatever. He sold all his stuff, and he sold it before the market spiraled downward or as it was spiraling downward. And he sits with loads of cash, eyeing current stock prices like a kid in a candy store. Sure, the market could go lower, but this investors know that the sale light is on, is lit. It's the blue light sale line is lit. It's on, and stocks are a lot cheaper than they were. And depending on what he buys, they're a third cheaper than what they were, or maybe even half off. COVID took it down 38%. Dow. NASDAQ plunged 80% after the dot-com crash. 1929 crash took it down the whole market by 80%, give or take. That call is a simple one. He asked me, what do I buy? Oh, okay, well, you buy some great companies at great prices and use the same method or criteria you might have used before the crash, if it was working, right? Second call is an investor who has had all he can take from his current advisor or himself. He's lost as to direction and has thrown up his hands in despair, and he may have held everything, or he may have sold everything, or about to sell everything, or somewhere in between. That's a phone call that's a little bit harder for me to take and answer. I usually begin by getting some history of where he's been in the markets, what his experiences have been in the market, how much he knows about the market, what he expects, and finally his tolerance for risk. I have found over many years of being in the markets, which is about 45 years or more, that an investor says he can tolerate risk, but he usually can't tolerate as much as he says he can. And a lot of times they also operate on the old gut feeling. I actually wrote an article and did a show on gut feelings called Gut Feelings. Basically, gut feelings are operating not on what they think will happen, but unbeknownst to them is probably operating on what has already happened. You usually don't get a bad feeling for the future of the market when the market is all fat and happy. At that time, investors think the markets always go up and they keep buying. That's probably the most dangerous time, euphoria. Your old Fed chief, Alan Greenspan, called it irrational exuberance. But those gut feelings, the bad ones, usually come when the market has been cratering already. Those gut feelings are drawing their conclusions based on the negative environment that is already upon you. Usually gut feelings are nonsense, they're usually wrong at the exact opposite time, and usually based on fear. That said, however, the chance that a market rout can turn into a severe and serious crash does exist. If a severe crash does occur, it can devastate profits and principal and your health. And for that reason, in my opinion, investors and advisors must always prepare for the worst, no matter what. You must take in consideration that it might happen. This possibility that it could happen, they say that the markets always come back. Well, someday they won't. Whether the world comes to an end or whatever, I'll explain why it won't come back. A man-made not-come-back event in just a second. But again, if a severe crash occurs, it can devastate profits and principal. And so in my opinion, you have to prepare for that. The forensic phone call, where I get it and I have to address losses, those are the ones that are most difficult. Where some advisors might promise better times ahead based on a belief markets always come back. Like I said, someday they won't come back. I'm not saying that they won't come back tomorrow, but eventually the world will end, so the market won't come back, or something else. If the markets do always come back, it still might take years or even decades. There have been times when it took a long time for the market to come back. I think after 1929, it took like 10, 12 years to get back to where it was. I have to investigate that to be sure of that, but I think I read that. After all, most, if not all, major crashes have been stopped dead by the Fed, okay? Most of all the major crashes have been manipulated out of the crash by the Federal Reserve or the banking system. In other words, had it not been for government intervention, the markets and indeed the economies may have suffered much worse than what occurred during the various horrendous crashes that occurred, let's say, in March of 2020, the 08-09 blow-up, the dot-com crash, 1987, long-term capital management fiasco, 1987 and 1974, and there are other historical routes that took place during various times of history, of course, 1929, 32, et cetera, et cetera. Each time, the Fed cobbled together bailouts and quick-printed cash to save the bacon. But at some point, the Fed will not be able to print more cash. The reason being, print more cash and keep printing more cash, and eventually all that cash finds its way into the marketplace, and not the stock marketplace. It's not the marketplace I'm talking about. The money does find its way into that too. But what I mean is a ton of cash, like trillions of dollars worth of cash, eventually finds its way to Main Street, you and I. And then the specter of inflation, the threat of inflation, becomes real. And increasing prices, and possibly really fast increasing prices, force the Feds to raise interest rates. And if inflation is bad enough, raise interest rates, they will raise interest rates by a lot, and maybe quickly. Paul Volcker, around the 1980s, raised rates 3% in one night. That our economy can never take. Inflation is a menace of their own making. What I mean by that is the Feds make monetary inflation, And the end game is the Feds can no longer play the only card they have, or one of the biggest cards they have in the poker game of life, the financial poker game of life, which is to print more money. Every time the market crashes, they print more money. That's because when you keep printing a lot of money, eventually, and it may take decades, years, decades, maybe even a century, that all that money eventually causes inflation. Sound familiar? The cure, printing money, has now caused the disease. The disease is no longer the falling stock market. The disease is inflation. And more of the cure, more printed money, will only cause more disease, inflation. Because the Fed is talking tough right now, the Feds basically say, yeah, we're going to have to raise rates because inflation is not transitory. It's not temporary. It is going to stick, they think. They did away with the transitory word. Of course, I wrote inflation was not transitory a year and a half ago. I said, it's not transitory. It's here to stay. How many of you raise a rent and then drop it again? Doesn't happen. They are ensuring us, and they keep ensuring us, that interest rate increases are headed our way. Despite it being politically distasteful, you know, Washington doesn't want the Feds to raise rates because they know they're going to crack everything. The Feds know inflation is the elephant in the room. In my opinion, the Feds fear inflation more than they fear a market crash. Market crash will devastate those in the market. Inflation will devastate everyone. No amount of money that they print will put the inflation elephant back in its cave because more money makes the elephant even bigger. So instead of more loose cash, the Feds have to do the opposite. They raise rates, and that takes cash out of the market. And in that, especially now with the level of debt in our economy here and indeed in the entire globe, think how much everybody owes. Think of the federal deficit. Think of the unfunded liabilities that amount almost to $200 trillion that the government has to pay. When they raise rates, that will likely crush the markets and everybody in it. And unfortunately, most investors don't know the first thing about how to protect themselves from this rare but deadly threat called inflation. Are you prepared? Maybe I'll do a show on how to prepare yourself for the inflation that, in my opinion, I think is about ready to get a whole lot worse. Okay, that does it for today's Money Matters. I want to thank you for being here today. Remember, the opinions expressed are my opinions only and do not necessarily represent those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. It is not meant as investment advice. I hold California insurance license OL34249 and I'm a Medicare agent approved in the state of California. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com where everything is free, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniverti. This has been show 343, New Year Correction Portfolio Tracking. Have a good day, depending on when you're. Bye-bye. Get back.